Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
Hi, this is Joe Campanelli, the host of In the Drink. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, it's Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. It's May 27th, 2014. We've got quite a show tonight. We've got a call-in from Allagash in Belgium. He's in Belgium talking about cool ships and lambics. Napa beer from Spain's in. And we'll talk with Nico Cremitas about the Craft Beer New York's app. So here we are, Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're talking to our friends BR and the Shelton Brothers and Nico Cremitas about beers and things. We're waiting for Jason Perkins to come online from Allagash Brewing. So here we are. It's been quite a week. A lot of things happened in New York City. Memorial Day weekend, we took the Jimmy's Number 43 rig out to Single Cut Brewery in Queens. We were out at the new brewery, Gun Hill, in Bronx. And Nico, I know you're part of the Craft Beer New York app now. You're the editor or the writer.
Yeah, it's basically the same position. So I do all the writing on the app. It's called Craft Beer New York. It's basically just an all-encompassing beer guide for the beer nerd in New York City.
So you're covering bars and breweries.
Yeah, bars, breweries, shops. We also have a news section, so I try to update that every 2 weeks or so. Just anything kind of going around the scene in New York.
So, I know that Josh Bernstein wrote the original app. Now, what's the potential for it? I mean, there's Untappd, there's Brew York, New York. There's a lot of places to learn about, you know, craft beer in New York. Why an app?
I feel like it kind of gives each bar, brewery, or restaurant a really nice in-depth profile. So I try to write, you know, at least 250 words on each piece. We also give a link to the beer menus, to the Twitter, so you can kind of go to the app to get everywhere else on each specific place.
Great. What are some of the new beer bars that you've covered?
Recently, I wrote up on Covenhoven, which is in Crown Heights. It's kind of like a shop in the realm of beer craft. So it's got 16 taps, a bunch of bottles and cans, and a really nice grassy backyard that I love to hang out in. And also Terrara at the Porch, which, you know, from the guys of the wine bar, Terrara. And it's the only option for beer on the High Line, actually. And it's got six drafts pouring all New York all the time.
That's great. Well, our call-in's on right now, so we're going to jump to him. So Jake and Perkins, the brewer at Allagash in Maine. Jason, how are you, buddy? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing great.
You know,
we've got
BR Royer from Shelton Brothers, who's been you were at the Night of the Great Thirst in Belgium, and she's been there before too. So just tell us a little bit about the experience of Night of the Great Thirst and why you wanted to talk to us about it, because I know you guys are doing great things with your cool ships and spontaneously fermented beers.
Yeah, absolutely. The experience was great. This was our third time pouring at that event. I think it might be the fifth year they had done it, if my memory is correct. But you know, for those who aren't familiar with it, it's a lambic only festival just outside of Brussels. Very, very communal based kind of festival where you buy bottles. You don't get little sample glasses. You actually buy a bottle, a big or a small bottle, and share it with your friends or random people at the tables near you. So a real unique feel to it, and nothing but spontaneously fermented beers there. And we were approached by the organizer of it, Yves Spaniels, several years ago, and he said, hey, would you like to pour beer at this event? You know, we like what you guys are doing, we like the way you're making these beers, and we think it would be fun to have a non-Belgian brewer here. And of course we said yes. You know, another opportunity to go hang out in Belgium. Why not? So We said, yeah, and this, like I said, it's the third time, and just a super cool festival to be a part of, and, you know, to look around and see the names on the beer stands, you know, have them be all Belgian beers, and then over Allagash over in the corner is kind of fun to see.
Yeah, cool, man. How did the Night of the Great Thirst start? So there's a big story behind it, right?
Yeah, the tradition behind it, and of course the organizer can speak to it a lot better than me, but my understanding is that it was kind of a response to some legislation that was being proposed in Belgium that was going to basically enforce some new restrictions upon lambic breweries. You know, lambic breweries are, you know, doing spontaneous fermentation and open fermentation, not open fermentation, but open cooling. And there was a food safety act of some kind that was coming about that would mean that these breweries would have to change their practices, change the way they, you know, the areas around their cool shift, which is, of course, a very vital part of that process. And so it was kind of a rebellion, if you will, against that. And so it was designed to raise some money against it and band the brewers together and have them, you know, be like one force kind of thing. So that was kind of the original impetus behind it. There's also a small cafe in the same town called Insurance Against the Great Thirst, which is a teeny little cafe. It's only open on Sundays for a few hours. It has an incredible lambic selection as well. And it's the owners of that pub, that family, who started the festival.
That's great, man. Tell us a little bit about the different styles of sour beers and what you guys in particular make at Allagash. Because I've heard so many stories. There's sour mashing, there's wild fermentation. You know, what's the difference between them?
Yeah, I mean, there's a long answer to that question. I mean, it's complicated. We at Allagash do lots of different styles of wild beers, and we tend to kind of group them into that description, wild beers, not necessarily sour beers, because that is certainly a component in some of the beers that we make, some acidity that adds to palatability and adds some interesting flavor to the beer. But there's also beers that are, say, just Brettanomyces-focused beers that I would not call sour, but are very much still, you know, unconventional in the grand scheme of the brewing world. So the way we often describe it is anything that we call wild, a wild beer, would be anything that has something other than brewer's yeast, traditional Saccharomyces yeast in it. It might have Saccharomyces brewer's yeast in it, but it has something else, whether it's spontaneous fermentation, whether it's intentional addition of Brettanomyces or lactobacillus or other lactic acid bacteria, or wild yeasts on the skins of fruit, so on. Any one of those things can be added. And, you know, I also look at it as, you know, as a brewer, you know, you're always looking for, you know, your toolbox, if you will, of ways to create interesting flavors. And, you know, using stuff like Brettanomyces and lactic acid bacteria and barrels is just another way to, you know, another tool that we can use to create interesting beers. So it's quite a wide range of technique for making those kind of beers.
And then tell us about your cool ship beers, because no one in New York gets to get your cool ship beers. Apparently you have to go to the brewery in Portland, Maine.
Yeah, that's at this point, that's strictly a volume issue. I mean, we just don't make very much of it. And so those beers are only available at the brewery, and we release them, and within a few days or maybe a week, they're gone until the next one gets released. But the idea with those beers was, you know, we started this project in 2007. We'd always been big fans of lambic beers, spontaneously fermented beers. And, you know, we weren't necessarily trying to make a lambic clone or anything like that. We were just kind of curious. You know, the traditional kind of mindset was you couldn't make these kind of spontaneously fermented beers well anywhere outside of the Seine Valley in Brussels. So, you know, within a short, you know, square mile area around Brussels. And that's, you know, that's where, you know, the great you know, Lambic breweries of the world, Canteen Dry, Fontaine and Bone, et cetera, are all in that area. But we were kind of curious, you know, is this true? And could we in Portland, Maine, produce the same, you know, beers in the same fashion, in the spontaneous tradition? And so it started really as an experiment, and we invested a bunch of time and money into something that might not have ever done anything. We really didn't know. There's no way of knowing until we really went through the process. And we were pleasantly surprised when, in fact, these beers came out very nice. And, you know, we've made some modifications over the years, but, you know, these beers are made 100% spontaneously, and that's kind of a funny term, but basically what it means is we do not pitch any yeast, we do not add any cultured yeast, all of the inoculation of any kind of yeast or bacteria is done naturally in the cooling vessel, on the cool ship.
Nico.
Do you think that the wild beer can be as big as the IPA? Because I was actually reading something on the Times today. Eric Asimov wrote about his love for Peekskill's Simple Sour, and I was actually surprised that he dedicated a whole article to, you know, spontaneous fermentation.
Huh, that's interesting. That's a great beer, by the way.
I love it.
Jeff's doing some great stuff up there. But I don't know. I mean, I think there's just... It's hard to do anything on the scale that IPA is doing. And I think it's got, you know, maybe a little bit more mass marketing appeal, maybe. But, you know, another thing that is restrictive to making a lot of these beers is time, you know, and space. You know, especially if beer is made in spontaneous fashion or some of the long-term aging beers, you know, you're talking a year, 2 years, sometimes more, to create these beers. And so... that's limiting in terms of volume, but I think that the interest in these beers will inevitably grow. It's and you know, as long as brewers are still making them well, and I think luckily there's a bunch of brewers who are making it well. Unfortunately, there's some, in my opinion, who aren't. But for the most part, there's some really nice beers out there in that I would put in that wild beer, sour beer category. I think it'll continue to grow at a pretty rapid rate. As big as IPA, that's a tall order.
PR, with Shelton Brothers, I know you've been to the festival, the Night of the Great Thirst, and you represent some of the great lambics. Do you want to say anything about what these beers are like or what they mean to you guys?
I mean, we've always enjoyed them. Our first beer that we brought in when Shelton Brothers started was Canteen Goose. Took a very, very long time to sell the container load of beer, which now goes in just a flash. But we've always enjoyed the traditionality of it, and the fact that it's something like a lot of beers back in the day would have had some element of wild beer character because people didn't know what yeast was. They didn't know necessarily how it worked. Things were being barrel aged or, you know, barrel conditioned. So you're also getting the bacteria from the wood. So essentially, you know, prior to Pasteur's discovery, and even following that, when people really weren't good about sanitation, you know, there would have been some element of funkiness, depending on how old the beer was. You know, younger beer, obviously, it wouldn't have had a chance to really grow. But, you know, to style a beer, there's just so much complexity going on, especially when it's done right, in terms of the flavors, the aromas. They're great beers for pairing with food. They're great for sipping on their own. I love them, personally. But
well, it seems like every brewery I know now is doing some kind of sour beer, whether it's Single Cut has a Kim. They're doing sour mashing. And it's mind-boggling for me. I always thought that people wanted to separate. They only wanted to do sour beers in one brewery and you know, non-sour beers in another. I mean, Jason, you want to talk about that? I mean, how do you guys do your program? And do you have any sour beers in the same brewery? Is he gone? Jason's gone. All right. But...
Well, yeah, usually people did want to keep it separate, would be very scared of having, you know, a wild yeast strain possibly contaminating their IPA or, you know, their other beers. But, you know, with good sanitation practices and yeast management, it's really not been an issue.
Hey, Jason?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I was just saying, tell us, how do you keep you have a brewery going and you're also doing the cool ship. So how do you, you know, keep the system separate, or, you know, because I'm just surprised that so many more breweries are actually making, you know, some type of sour beer. I know some of them have like a dedicated fermenter or something, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we work pretty hard to keep things separate and clean. You know, I think a lot of brewers are nervous about mixing it, and it's valid. It's a very valid thing to be nervous about. I mean, the kind of irony of it is, you know, the microbes that, and, you know, the little organisms that we're using intentionally or creating an environment for in the case of spontaneous beer, those exact organisms are the exact ones that 99%+ of the breweries in the world do everything they can to keep out of their beer. You know, beer is actually not a very hospitable environment for most microbes, which is a good thing. So we don't have to worry about the things that people make in milk and yogurt and chicken and stuff like that have to worry about, you know, stuff that actually can hurt people. But the other side of that coin is the stuff that can live in beer is very resilient and kind of wants to be in that environment and is therefore around. So, you know, breweries all over the world are, their labs are working hard to keep out Brettanomyces and Pediococcus and Lactobacillus. And here we are intentionally adding them to the beer. So you have to be very careful. We have a lot of our equipment is separate. We have separate hoses, gaskets, valves. We have a separate bottling line that we use. Tanks we share, but tanks, stainless steel is pretty easy to clean. It's the porous material, gasket material, that's a little harder. But the other thing I think it's important for all brewers to know, I mean, it's just good sanitary practice. If you're following good sanitary practice, you're going to be in pretty good shape, because in reality, even at the cleanest brewery in the world that doesn't do wild production, there is still somewhere in that atmosphere Pediococcus, Lactobacillus, and Brett. It's around. And so even if you're not making these beers, if you're not following good practice, you're going to see that stuff anyway. We have to be even more vigilant because there's a lot more of it around, and it's going through some shared equipment. So we have pretty vigorous procedures that kind of only our senior brewers are kind of authorized to be handling those beers, just to be extra safe. It's kind of the last piece of your brewery training is wild beer handling, just because it's something we take pretty seriously.
Jason, thanks so much for calling in. One last plug. Tell us what's going on at Allagash this summer. Should we come and visit you?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. I mean, obviously, coming to visit Maine in the summer, you can't beat that in general. But we've got a new tasting room that we opened up early last summer, but really kind of got up to speed in the off-season. We got a new program. We're doing some tasting in the barrel room as well on tours. So, yeah, absolutely. Come up and see us. There's lots going on up in Portland. And there's, you know, the other thing I'll mention is not just Allagash. I mean, we're lucky, like a lot of part of the country, that we've got a bunch of new breweries open, some guys doing some really good stuff. Some of the folks have just been around for a short period of time. So seems like every month passes and we've got a couple new interesting breweries opening up. So good place to visit for sure.
Awesome. All right, Jason. Thanks for coming on. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
So, you like good beer. Whether you're a craft beer pro or just had your first sip of an IPA, GreatBrewers.com is your number one beer resource on the internet. GreatBrewers.com bridges the gap between the world's great brewers and the consumers who enjoy their products. With so much information and misinformation out there, GreatBrewers.com focuses on education and leaves no stone unturned. Take the Great Beer Test on their website and browse through an extensive product catalog. Download their mobile beer cloud app, which includes a GPS beer finder, a beer sommelier, and descriptions for over 5,000 different brews. What are you waiting for? Back up that passion for craft beer with some solid information and education. Visit GreatBrewers.com today.
All right. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. All right, we've got a great show. We just spoke with Jason Perkins from Allagash on the phone. We're talking about, sour beers and all that stuff. And most of all, it was pretty interesting, this night of the Great Thirst in Belgium, that actually the government was considering shutting down certain lambic breweries. And funny thing, again, over here, everybody in America is trying to make sour beers and lambic beers and all that. So that was a good talk. Jason Perkins, thanks again for calling in. The other story today, we've got the new cool brewers from Navarra in Spain. If you haven't been to Navarra, it's somewhere in Spain. And we've got two of the brewers, Juan and Alfredo, and Sven Bosch is going to talk for them. So tell us a little bit about Napa Beer, where the name came from, and, you know, just a little more about the identity of the brewery.
Well, we started 5 years ago. Napa Beer is the two words. Napa means Navarra, but in the Basque language. And then beer, we put it in German, because we have good friends in Germany. So we thought, okay, let's do both names together. And, when we started, that was only with two beers, with a Pilsner beer and a Dunkel. We still brew the Pils. We stopped it with the Dunkel. And now we have a range of about 14 different beers. From IPAs, saisons, barley wines. Well, now we are starting also aging beers in wood, in oak barrels, and whiskey barrels, wine barrels. So just looking for something different. No?
Yeah. So, man, how about let's have Juan and Alfredo say hello in Spanish. Say a few words.
Hello.
Hello.
Hola. Say your name.
My name is Alfredo.
And do you have anything you want to say in Spanish?
Spanish, Alfredo.
Juan.
Hi, my name is Juan, and I am a brewer in Napa Beer.
So let's talk about Spanish beer. We've met a few. I know Sheldon Brothers. You guys have a couple, don't you? What are some of the other Spanish beers you have?
We have. I think there's about four or five right now. Aside from Napa, we've got Del Montseny. We also have Aguillon, as well as Guinot, which I'm probably massacring the pronunciation because I only speak French.
You do good.
But you said, was it Montseny? You told me that one of the Spanish breweries has a sour beer, because we were talking earlier today about
exactly.
Other sour
beers.
They're
getting very popular sour beers. Yeah, they've got it's an English pale ale that's been aged for 1 year in French oak barrels. So it's a very, it's sort of a, I almost call it a sour with training wheels, in that it's approachable. It's not, you know, a super one-dimensional acetic bomb, but it's also something that's, there's complexity enough for people who like sours to enjoy that. But most of our Spanish brewers are doing more along the more traditional lines on some barrel aging.
So what was there before, you know, 20 years ago? What were the beers you could get in Spain?
Well, 20 years ago in Spain, it was really bored for us, because we had only industrial beers, like the big breweries, and then few beers from Belgium. But the last 4 years, 4 or 5 years, the beer scene in Spain has changed a lot, and most of all, the two last past years. And now I think that there are more than 150 breweries, new breweries in Spain. Yes, the style is really traditional, pale ales, IPAs. Stouts, they're beginning with some stouts, really interesting stouts, and then saisons. That's some of this, the our favorite style that we brew in Napa Beer, no? And yeah, the people is also changing, no? Because you know that Spain is a wine country. It's really difficult to fight against the wine, but we are doing our best. And I think, the last years has changed a lot. People in Europe is looking after the Spanish beers. That was something that 5 years ago was impossible. And, we are doing our best.
We tried some of our friends from Iberian Beer United. They were importing the Giesberger. Do you know Giesberger?
Yeah.
Lanjub.
Lanjub, yeah.
And Zagra.
Saga, yeah.
So are those comparable to you, or are you smaller than them?
No, I think that we're really far from each other, so they do their best in... La Jupe is from Tarragona, in Catalonia. We are in the País Basque. Saga is in the center of Spain, in Toledo. And, they are doing their best also. Even Light Joke did some collaboration brews with Brian from Stillwater. This year we have done 5 collaborations with people like Mick Keller, Knock No, and Brugerit, also Lervik, and Beavertown, you know, from England. And that's what we are doing now. So,
how do you get to be so international? I mean, you've got to make beers with McKellar. Everyone knows McKellar, Nognio. You know, you're in the States now. So, what are you doing here? You're doing collaborations in America.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah. With 4 breweries. First, we start with Pretty Things. Then with Cambridge. Then with Oxbow, and Weyerbacher.
Yeah, and BR, is that part of what you guys do as importers? I mean, do you introduce them to other breweries, or that's just kind of what's going on?
It's more. It's usually the brewers who make who you know, talk amongst themselves. It's not something that we try to like market and plan. Mostly, it's they meet up at festivals. Get in touch with each other. Of like, oh, I had your beer. This is follows along my philosophy. I mean, it's perfect. You know, the Napa brews this really nice size saison, so they're going to be brewing a saison with Oxbow, who also does. Fantastic saisons. We might put brewers in touch with each other if one says, I really like so and so's beer. Both American brewers will put in touch with our European brewers and vice versa. But in general, yeah, it's something between the brewers that happens.
Do you think I'd like to ask Juan, and you can translate it. Ask him, what is philosophy of beers?
¿Cuál es tu filosofía sobre la cerveza?
Spanish.
Yeah, Spanish. He'll translate.
Me gusta hacer cervezas que me... principalmente me gusta hacer cervezas que yo las querría beber, ¿no? O sea, me gusta hacer cosas que las pruebo y me gustan y hago mi propio concepto sobre el estilo y la repito en una receta o la elaboramos, ¿no? En la parrilla. Y sí que entendemos que tienen que ser cervezas que se tienen que beber fácil, que las tienes que acabar, no pueden ser cervezas que cueste mucho beber y la gente se la haga un poco pesada, ¿no? Sino que disfrute de esa cerveza y sea fácil de beber.
Yeah. So what he says is that he looks for brewing beers that he wants to drink. So he looks always after an easy drinkable beer. We don't want extreme beers, but we want that the people who drink our beers just enjoy it. And that's the way that all our beers are really like it is. Low alcohol beers, 6-7%. We have 2 strong beers. That's the Hop Doom and the Pumpkin Jack with 11% alcohol. But the other beers are really easy because we want that all the people can enjoy that beer.
And then tell us a little bit about the Napa Pils.
Yeah, Napa Pils. That's the first beer that we brewed 5 years ago. It's no pasteurization, so unfiltered. It's a style more like in Germany and in Czech. It's really pils fresh. What we want is that people can drink again a pils so as it has to be, not an industrial pils that's only watery.
What's the next beer that we just got?
The next beer is the Saison. Saison is a beer that we just launched 2 years ago. It's made with citric, with peel, orange peel, lemon peel, and lime peel. What we want is a citrus taste for the beer. And we use Saison yeast from France. And then... 7% alcohol, and I think this is really refreshing for summer also. But you can do it all year round if you want. So,
Nico, is it your first time tasting the Napa beers?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just curious: are there any styles native to Spain or?
No. This we cannot talk about Spanish style beer, Spain. There are many breweries, but it's always on the German style or Czech style or Belgian style. And we brew the beers that we want to bring. That's what we do there.
You might, can you ask Alfredo something too? Can he say a few words? So tell us about what it's like for him being a brewer in Spain. You can say in Spanish.
¿Qué te parece a ti ser fabricante de cerveza en España?
Me parece una forma de crear una cultura e intentar demostrar a la gente que no solo puedes beber cervezas buenas fuera de Europa o traerlas de Estados Unidos. Y es un honor para mí poder producir algo tan bueno como lo que hacemos nosotros. Y poder llegar hasta aquí o salir de España como con el producto que hacemos.
So, what he says is that...
It's kind of like the BBC, you know.
Yeah. He's brewer because he wants to know to people that in Spain there's also good brewers. Because when we want, when we look for some beers, we have to buy beers from Europe or from the States. Because in Spain we didn't found that beers. But now what we are doing is that people discover that also in Spain are good beers. That's for him a pleasure for being brewer there.
No, it's beautiful. I like this beer and culture thing. It's nice. So you're here in New York. And you must be, how many bars, restaurants, bottle shops have you guys been to in one day?
In one day? Well, I think maybe 8-9 bars. Yeah. We start early in the morning.
You're smiling. That's why.
And we are doing our best here. Yeah.
Pierre, which places did you take them today in New York City?
We tried, since they were only here for today, tomorrow they head up to Massachusetts, so, you know, kind of real whirlwind tour, but wanted to hit representations of different places in New York, so we went to some Spanish places, Donostia, a new place in the East Village that has their beers, and thought we'd meet for coffee at 11 a.m., and they've already gotten their beer and their vermouth. And then we hit up some beer bars, the Jeffrey, some bottle shops, Beer Table Pantry, out in this neighborhood, Hops and Hocks and the Sampler. I can't remember where else now. But, you know, just a range of, like, the bottle shops and growler shops, restaurants, beer bars.
And if you're listening live, they'll be tonight at Jimmy's Number 43 at 7 o'clock. We're doing a cheese tasting, too, so you can taste American cheeses and... We have the ZZ Amber on draft tonight. I think we have this Saison and the Napa Pils.
I believe so.
Yeah.
And then
it's a nice lineup.
Once as they before they head back to Spain on Saturday the 7th in the afternoon, we'll be at Spite and Dival with some more drafts.
We might even put an Oxbow. We have an Oxbow Farmhouse Ale too. That might be on tonight. So
should we expect all those collaborations that they're doing now, like probably within the next month or so?
I suppose we'll have to find out.
Yeah, and for these guys, Sven, what is it like coming to America and seeing the beer community?
Well, some years ago, we can only read about the American beer scene. Now we are here. We are joined with people, lots of friends, and well, I don't think that this will be the last trip to the States. I think that maybe next year we'll go back again and to join with the brewers and do what we want, what we love, that's brewing.
All right. How do we say cheers in Spanish?
Salud.
Oh, salud. That's salud. An easy one. Salud.
Easy enough.
All right. Hey, we'll take another break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Hey,
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're out at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. We're going to sit down and have a little food, including the pizza, and then we're off to Jimmy's number 43 for a cheese tasting, and we'll try some of the Napa beers. So this is a great place, heritageradionetwork.org. I highly recommend. Go online and become a member. I think these days there's a sliding scale. There's many ways you can join, but just know you're supporting the up-and-coming Great Food Radio Network. There's over 30 shows right now, and we're very proud to be. I think we have the most shows, most episodes so far, Beer Sessions Radio. So, of course, people like beer the most, and I like beer. So we've got some great guests here tonight. We got Napa Beer from Spain, BR from Shelton Brothers, Nico Kremidis, a great beer writer who's also working on the Craft Beer New York app. So, hey, Savannah, you're the importer for the guys from Napa Beer. You're also their translator, and I know they understand me. I understand them. But you have to speak in English for them. So tell us about how did you become like this importer guy for this brewery in Spain?
Well, when I met Napa Beer, that was 2-3 years ago. Well, I own a bar in Spain, and I started well with the beer from Napa Beer, and that was a good relationship. And last year, they called me and they say, "Do you want to be partner of Napa Beer?" I say, "Yeah, of course." I didn't thought about it. So I said, "Yeah." And now we are six people. When the brewery started 5 years ago, there were only three. And we have changed the brewery now for the third time in 5 years. Now we the brewery house is from 30 hectares. And that's what we are doing. We have two brewers, Juan and Alfredo. Then we have Josu. Josu is the manager. Then we have Javier. He's helping me in the brewery. Then Alex, he lives in Madrid, but he helps us with the brewery also. And then I live in Barcelona, but I do my job with the marketing and the export.
So where do you sell the beer?
We sell the beer in Norway, Denmark, Holland, France, and in the States. And now we're starting also in England. We start also in Italy and in Brazil.
And then do people in Spain buy the beer too?
Yeah, yeah. We have also part in the beer market in Spain, in Barcelona, Madrid, and in the south of Spain.
And are you selling more beer in Spain or for export?
No, for export, yeah.
Beer, what is it about that? I mean, we see a lot of small breweries like this. Is this what's going on in the world? I mean, is this export, specialty craft beer?
It really depends on the country and the brewery. For some of the countries that we import beer from, we sell more here than they do in their own country. Simply maybe there's just not a beer culture in place. Notably, especially for the Spanish and the French beers, where there's such a culture of wine that it's very hard, unless you're living near the brewery, if you're in the town near the brewery, or you're in a city like Barcelona or somewhere that has a good beer bar where people are getting into it, it can be very hard to make that transition from beer to wine in a culture where everyone's been for hundreds of years, just because of the land, because they could only grow grapes and not grain and hops, where wine's been dominating for 1,000 years. So yeah, we have a few years to go before beer takes over.
So Ben, ask Alfredo and Juan. So when did they first start making beers? Were they home brewers? Were they doing it as a job?
Yeah, Juan was a home brewer for maybe 10 years before 10 years. The brewery. Yeah, 10 years home brewer. And then he started with the brewery. And Alfredo as home brewer for 2 years, no? More or less, yeah.
Yeah. And how did Juan first get introduced to home brewing?
¿Cómo empezaste con la fabricación casera?
Tengo familia en Alemania, en German, y empecé allí a conocer un poco la cerveza. Y cuando volví otra vez de vacaciones de allí, pues empecé a elaborar cerveza en casa. Y
yeah, so family in Germany, then each year he traveled to Germany and he met people drinking beers, enjoying beers, and then when he came back to Spain, he said, okay, let's try to introduce me myself in the home brewing.
Cool. Any questions, Nico?
Do you see? I wanted to kind of, I guess, touch back on the international scope. Like, do you see a lot of countries starting to get into beer that were previously, for hundreds of years, just wine?
Yeah, definitely. But it's a slow going, especially for the southern countries we find. I mean, Italy, it's especially in northern Italy, you know, they're brewing a lot of different styles with just, you know, really different ingredients. They're not doing traditional styles. So I think that's more, in some ways, it's less beer-like and just more of a beverage. But yeah, for France and Spain in particular, it's an uphill battle. Even in the States, you know, we'll approach French restaurants, Spanish restaurants, and especially the old school ones, if they just think, oh, no, it's beer, it's you know, I've got the light lager, that's enough, or it's oh no, that's, you know, the peasants drink wine or drink beer, you know, we're classy, we have wine. We do much better actually in American restaurants. We're much more forward thinking in terms of their beverage program. But in, you know, in terms of the countries themselves, it's getting better. It's just, I think it just takes a while to change perceptions of that. And also, you know, Paris, for example, has until recently had pretty much no beer bars that weren't just the giant, you know, Belgian imports. You know, to get a local beer in a Parisian restaurant or bar was next to impossible. Now you're finding that, but that's only been in like the past 2-3 years.
So are there any beer festivals in Spain? Is it?
Yeah. The last years, there are many beer fests. There's one in Barcelona, the Barcelona Beer Fest, in Madrid. Then by Carlos from Agullons, the beer festival Mediona. Each summer, that's, well, I think about 50, 60 breweries there. Then another beer fest is in Catalonia, in Blanes. Also beer fest with not only Spanish brewers, but also with beers from Italy or from Holland or Belgium. So, and and then little local beer fest, maybe with 10, 15 breweries. Yeah.
Do they have any secret ingredients?
That's some one. Of them.
What's a secret some ingredient in the saison?
¿Cuál es el secreto de la saison, el ingrediente?
No, it's very simple. It's brewed with orange and lemon peel, but it's a fresh orange and lemon peel. And the French saison, it's a French yeast. I don't know.
So you're not afraid to tell your secrets?
The secret is that there's one person there peeling the orange and the lemon for one day.
Yes. But the one thing they have is also...
What do they call that guy's job?
That's job. That's what's he ever get
the peeler?
I don't
know.
Then we're getting dirty.
Yeah.
But I want to point out that they've recently changed the artist for their label. So if you can see the Pilsner is a very simple, sunny looking label, and then the Saison has got the vulture on it, and they've got a guy doing great label art. You say he's from the south, I think.
Yeah, from Malaga. For the south of Spain, his name is Antonio Bravo, and he's a really good artist. So when we call him, we need a label for a new beer. Okay, well, what style of beer is it? Well, it's a saison, IPA. Okay, I will do some draws and I will show it to you maybe tomorrow. But no, one hour later, he call us and say, okay, it's done. So and you can see that it's great job.
You guys have a cool team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have.
I like when you speak in English, too, Juan.
I am learning in this moment English.
Okay. What do you guys think of New York? Because I know it's your first time here. What do you think of it?
Oh, well, it's great. We have met so many people and friends here. People is very friendly with us. We go to a bar and in 2 minutes we are talking with all the people. And even when you go, you see all the tap rooms that they have, and it's just really cool. Yeah.
Here's a question. So, in the brewery, it's in Navarra.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have a tasting room? Can people go there and taste beer too?
Not at this moment. We are doing it, but I think maybe after summer it will be ready.
Yeah. So if people were tasting your beer, what would be some foods that you would want to eat with them?
Well, we are in Spain. We have good cheese. We have good jamón, the ham, the Spanish ham. And then, you can eat seafood. You can eat good meat. Our beers pour really good with all that.
So you just eat your regular food and you like beer with it.
Yeah.
I like beer with food, too.
Yes.
That's what we're going to do tonight. We got some cheeses, American cheeses coming up, and we're going to drink them with the Napa beer tonight, which is going to be fun. And you can tell us what you like better and what you don't.
Okay, yeah, of course.
And what about for you, Nico? You're this Craft Beer New York app. Do you guys ever talk about food and beer pairings? Or it's more focused on just the bars and the breweries?
It's more focused on the beer pairings. But speaking of, you know, beer and food, I know that you wanted to touch on the collaboration with Great South Bay.
Yeah.
So, so I'm brewing a tzatziki-style, I guess a Greek-style Berliner Weiss with Great South Bay with fresh cucumbers. Probably in the next month, so we're hoping to do a release party at Jimmy's number 43 for that.
So have you made it yet? Or
no, we're going to be brewing it probably in the next week or two. So
we have time. We can plan that out.
Yeah, we have time.
But how did you envision the recipe with the fresh cucumbers?
I don't know. I went to Great South Bay just to kind of, you know, talk shop with the guys, and one thing led to another, you know, after a few drinks, and we decided to to brew something, and Nico Weiss was born.
And you're also the columnist for Yankee Brew News.
Yeah, Yankee Brew News and Long Island Pulse as well.
So what's going on in the next couple of months in New York City beer scene?
Well, I wanted to tie in also to, you know, how we were talking about wild beers and just give a shout out to Transmitter Brewing. I think they were on the show recently, and yep. They do all their beers fermented with Brett. They just opened in Long Island City.
That's great. I actually had I'm going to shout out for a friend, too. Patty Jackson opened up the old Egg Space. If you go to Williamsburg in Brooklyn, 135 North 5th Street. It's called Delaware and Hudson. She's doing great American food, and she's actually carrying Transmitter right now.
Oh, great.
She's doing wines, but she wants large format bottles, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out and get it in the app.
Yeah, that's good. Beer, anything else you want to say about Napa beer? I mean, it's quite a tour. They're visiting Oxbow, Cambridge, Pretty Things, and Weyerbacher.
Yeah, and then they'll be down in Philadelphia for, I think, one night for Philly Beer Week, which starts, I guess, next week, I think it does.
So what kind of beer are they going to make at Weyerbacher? Because they make great IPAs.
They're making an IPA.
Oh, yeah?
Naturally.
All right.
¿Qué te parece a ti, Oscar Weyerbacher?
Double IPA.
Yeah.
And Pretty Things is double IPA with Oxbow with a Saison. And Farmouche Saison.
Yeah.
With Cambridge is the same Farmouche Saison, but is the difference is much acid than a normal Saison.
Yeah, a little bit more sour.
What about Pretty Things? So what are you making at Pretty Things?
Pretty Things.
Pretty Things is a double IPA. It's the first double IPA in Pretty Things.
Yeah.
Nice.
Do you think that the Spanish people would like the double IPA, like the really hoppy beers? Are they ready for that?
Yes, they are. Yeah, because you know that hops give really fresh taste for the beer, and Spain is a really warm country. It's really hot in summer, and people prefer an IPA, a double IPA, instead of a stout or imperial stout. For us, selling stouts is really difficult in Spain. But the IPAs and double IPAs are best sellers.
All right. So if it's hot out, I should drink hoppy beer.
Yeah.
I like that.
Although we will be having a stout from them arriving very shortly, the Pumpkin Czar. The
Pumpkin Czar, yeah. It's an imperial stout made with pumpkin and chili habanero.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, this is an interesting show. We spoke by phone to Jason Perkins in Maine, and we spoke through a translator with our new best friends from Spain, and we got an app working on it. I don't know. Who wants to sum up this show? This is a pretty good one. We have so much fun doing this show.
International.
I'll tell you, it was international.
From New York to Spain.
And Allagash to Spain, and this is pretty cool. I'd like to thank everybody. I have to say, this show is pretty great. We've got to meet so many people from different countries and different states, and it does show what Heritage Radio Network can do. I think most of our listeners are actually from other countries and other states, and there's a great reach, and it's a really great network to be members of. A couple of shout-outs. We've got the Napa Beer Tasting tonight. Jimmy's number 43. I don't know if I went dead. Am I still alive? And coming up also next week, there's a very special event in New York, the New York Rare Beer Festival. It's with Taste New York and the New York State Brewers Association. There's over 26 brewers from New York State serving their most rare beers. And you can go to the brooklynbrewery.com website. It's neat. New York is stepping up its game. there's some cool events. Some brewers like Southern Tier, Big Alice, Keegan, Crossroads, Browns, and Peekskills, for example, will have some very rare, unusual beers you don't get to see in New York, and that's next Thursday. So go check it out on the brooklynbrewery.com website under events, the New York Rare Beer Festival on June 5th. We'll be there. It's going to be a great night. And thanks, everybody, for coming on tonight. Thanks to our sponsors at greatbrewers.com for helping to bring this podcast to you. Thanks to Juan, Alfredo, Sven, BR, Nico, and Jason for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Maggie Seiden, Justin Kennedy, and engineer Jack Inslee. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Yeah.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.